Well, good morning. How are you doing this morning? Good. I hope you're having a good morning. You know, some weeks we have better weeks than other weeks. This week's been a great week for me. I've had a great week. And I hope you do too. I realize also sometimes we don't have the best weeks. But I do want you to know that if this was not that week for you, a good one is on its way, guaranteed. Today we are in our third week of this Ten Commandments for Today series. And in this series, we started off the very first Sunday with the first two commandments. And that was, of course, you know, no other gods than me and not to make any idols. And an idol, of course, is, you know, any item, any person, anything that we love more than God just may be an idol in our lives. And I think that's definitely one we have to pay attention to, because we probably have a lot of them, if we're honest with ourselves, the things that we pay attention to and that we love more than we love God. Last week, we talked a little bit about the third commandment in, you know, don't use the Lord's name in vain. And we learned that that was much more than just not saying, oh my God, but that was more the idea that we shouldn't falsely use God's name for our own purposes, which is more like saying things like, you know, God said this, or God told me to say this to you. I'm being sure that we're only saying what God said when God actually said that, versus something that we might be doing for our own personal agenda. But today, we're going to look at the fourth commandment, which is keeping the Sabbath. And so to start off with, I realize that the word Sabbath is not one that you use very often in day-to-day language. If there is a churchy word, Sabbath is one of those. So let's define it here. What is Sabbath? Day of rest, okay. Other ideas? Other things it includes? Worship, okay? Day of rest and worship? Could be kind of honing in on it. If we take a look at what Webster has to say, kind of in our culture, Webster says that the Sabbath is defined as the seventh day of the week, so there's an order to it, like when it is, observed from Friday evening to Saturday evening as a day of rest and worship by Jews and some Christians. And then Webster has another definition underneath it, kind of a second one, that says Sunday observed among Christians as a day of rest and worship. Do you see a conflict between these two definitions? Different days. How isn't Webster supposed to help us out with this, right? But there's two different days listed in the first definition to the second definition. Regardless of when it is, and we'll get to that, there is a truth that our souls, our bodies, are in desperate need of rest. And I'll go as far as to say we need that rest because we were created to need that rest. And most of us aren't getting it. In fact, when it comes to just sleep alone, we're in a country that is in a sleep deprivation. Studies that they do on sleep say that most Americans, well, let's just do a little poll here. Who gets 8 hours or more of sleep on average every night? Eight or more? A few of you? We're super jealous of you folks. Who's a seven or less crowd? Okay, keep your hands up. 6 hours or less. Five or less. Four or less? Holy smoke, I'm going to put your hands down. Four or less. Wow. I do not know how you function on a day-to-day basis. We're all wired differently. We all need certain amounts of sleep. In America, when they do studies on sleep in America, the average American adult gets fewer than 7 hours of sleep. In fact, they function on 4 to 6 hours of sleep on average in America. I just can't literally get my brain around that. Now, when you... In the studies that they do of people who sleep different amounts on a regular basis, they have discovered that if you are an adult that gets fewer than 7 hours of sleep, now this isn't for everybody, this on average, people who get less than 7 hours of sleep, whether for just one night or a course of day or weeks or months, they have more difficulty concentrating than those who get more. They have more mood problems. They have slower metabolisms. And they have higher blood pressures than people that get 7 to up to 9 hours of sleep. And believe it or not, that when you surpass 9, you start to see negative effects again. There's really only so much sleep you need. It can be detrimental on either side. But most Americans are getting less than 6 hours of sleep per night. And the National Sleep Foundation recommends these numbers. They recommend that preschoolers get 10 to 13 hours of sleep a night to be healthy. Now, these are just averages. Every person's a little different. School age, that's kids 6 to 13 years old, need at least 9 to 11 hours. Teenagers, 8 to 10 hours. Adults, somewhere between 7 and 9 hours. And seniors, a little less, 7 to 8 hours. Now, I happen to fall right smack dab in the middle. I'm an 8-hour guy. I don't always get 8 hours, but I need 8 hours of sleep. If you give me 7 hours of sleep, I can tell the next day. Give me 6 hours of sleep, you'll be able to tell the next day. And I'm dead serious. My patience is less. My compassion drops. My interest in even talking to you diminishes. Pastoral ministry for me does not happen at 6 hours of sleep or less. In fact, if you encounter me on one of those days, you can just say, "Pastor Doug, what's up? Did you not get enough sleep last night?" And I'll probably respond with, "No!" Because I get really frustrated. I don't like how I feel. I don't like how I interact with the world and how I perceive the world interacts with me. Now, there are other people that I love and care about in my life that can get a lot less sleep and do just fine. I don't get it. I'm not wired that way. I just require a certain amount of sleep. But I don't get all the sleep that I need. And chances are you're probably not getting all the sleep you need. And we are people that are in need of rest. And not just nightly rest, but we need rest from the daily rat race of life. Some of us are working so hard and going so many different directions, and the kids this and the kids that, and got to earn money for this and money for that. We kind of work ourselves to the bone. And then we say we need our downtime, which, you know, I get it, that's important, but sometimes that gets in the way of the rest we really need. You know, average American is 2.5 hours of television a day. Maybe some of you are pushing that average high, maybe some of you are a little less, but we are in need of rest. They find that when you want to unplug and you need to kind of unwind from your day, one of the worst things you can do is watch TV. When it actually talks about what your mind needs and the rest that your mind needs. We are in rest deprivation. That's why God says take a Sabbath. And when he says this in the fourth commandment, to take a Sabbath, there's no greater controversy than this specific commandment. Because there's a lot of rules that Christians have about the Sabbath, and there's very little agreement on how we're supposed to keep the Sabbath. And I notice that even in our own discussions around here. But the need for rest can hardly be argued. So let's check out this command in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, starting at verse 8. It says, "Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy." Keeping it holy, the word for holy is what? I mean, the definition for holy is what? Set apart, set aside. So you want to keep this day separate from other days. So remember this day of Sabbath, this day of rest, and keep it holy. Now, the word Sabbath can be found 90 times in the Old Testament, 50 times in the New Testament. It is a Hebrew word, and if you were going to break down the word Sabbath into the Hebrew equivalent, without using the Hebrew word Sabbath, because that's really not in our dictionary, without it being a Hebrew word, do you know what you would translate Sabbath into? Like, what's the English equivalent of Sabbath? It's stop. It's not even rest. It's just stop. So picture it this way. You come up to a four-way intersection, and there's that red octagon sign, and on it says Sabbath. That's exactly what it means, to stop. Not to just take a rest, but it is to stop. And so God says, observe the day of stop and keep it holy. Set it apart, different than the other 6 days. There's something unique and special about this idea of Sabbath. And so the Jewish Sabbath begins actually on Friday night. It begins on Friday night, not at sunset, but it begins on Friday night when the first 3 stars appear in the sky, which is about 40 minutes after sunset. So if it's cloudy They just wait until about 40 minutes. There's actually a 40-minute grace period where you can still get things done, but once that 40 minutes hit, you're done, because even if you can't see the sky, those stars would be out, and that's it. And it goes all the way for 24 hours till Saturday evening after sunset when the first three stars appear. That's the Sabbath. That's the Jewish Sabbath that they still hold and keep today. But the idea of Sabbath doesn't come from the Ten Commandments. It doesn't come from Exodus chapter 20. The idea of Sabbath is actually goes way back at the time of creation. In fact, in the book of Genesis, chapter 2, we see where God has completed creation. So he's done all the creation of the earth and the sky and the water and the plants and the animals, and human beings, the whole nine yards. And we get to Genesis chapter 2 starts kind of a new idea, but yet the seventh day. And it says, so the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was complete, all done. Verse 2, on the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, set apart, because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation. God created this kind of 6-1 idea, a pattern of 6-1. 6 days of doing, 1 day of not doing. It's kind of how he's wired us. We work a certain amount of days, and we need a certain amount of rest. You can't just work forever. You do have to take breaks from what you're doing. We see this pattern throughout nature as well. In fact, most farmers will tell you that you cannot continue to plant the same crop in the same field year after year after year. Your yields will slowly diminish. Eventually, that field will not even be able to grow that crop. It needs a break. It needs a rest. It used to be that it was a six-year planting season on a field, and then they would turn it over, and for 1 year it would be dormant, or maybe something else would plant on it, but that land would get a rest from that particular crop in order for it to continue to be able to produce. Everything in creation is kind of designed with this 6-1 ratio, a time of work and a time to rest. Now, during the Exodus of God's people, God instituted the Sabbath and the collection of this stuff called manna. Now, if you don't know what manna is in the Old Testament, it was this white substance that would form kind of like dew on the ground, but it would be something tangible and touchable that you could collect. And they could bake it into cakes. They said it tastes like honey cakes. I've never had one, but they sound good. But they would collect this stuff. They collect all that they needed to eat that day. This is the food that God provided them while they were in the desert. But if they collected a lot of food one day and then stored it over to the next day, when they opened it up, it would have maggots in it, it would be rotten, it wouldn't be good anymore. So God said, every single day, I will provide the manna for you, and you'll collect it, and that'll be your food for the day. But he said, on the Sabbath, no collecting, because it's a day of rest. It was the only time, the day before the Sabbath, you could collect a double amount and hold it over to the Sabbath day, and it wouldn't rot. Any other day you tried it, it would rot. But on the Sabbath, you could eat the food that you collected only from the day before. In fact, even a double portion would fall on the ground. So this was this idea of this manna. Now, manna is, again, a Hebrew word. Anyone know what manna translates to in English? Yeah, what is it? That's what they called it. And they always called it that. Just, what is it? We now use the Hebrew word because to say what is it is kind of a weird thing, but that's all they said. Hey, did the what is it fall down? Yeah, what is it? I don't know, but it's there. That's what it was called. What is it? In Exodus chapter 16, verse 26, God is very clear on this collection of the manna. And he says, you may gather food for 6 days, but the seventh day is the Sabbath. There will be no food on the ground that day. It didn't even fall. But the day before, you were able to collect it. The seventh day is always holy for God. But not only the seventh day, but the seventh week and the seventh month and the seventh year. And you'll see throughout the Bible all these feasts and holy days, they all fall on Sabbath years. They all fall on Sabbath months. This idea of six and then a day of celebrating, a day of rest, a day of focusing on God, a day of worship, a day of remembering what God had done. The scriptures, you look at any of these feasts and festivals, are always falling on some kind of Sabbath. In fact, there was a thing called the Year of Jubilee, which would happen at year 50. Year 50 would happen after seven sets of 7 years, 49 years. And on the 50th year, all property that you had to sell to live slaves that you had to sell your family into slavery, people would come back. Land would be given back. There was a resetting of everything that would happen on the year of Jubilee, a time of rest for the entire land and for all of the people from their slavery and their oppression. It was a big deal. God takes the Sabbath seriously. God takes the Sabbath so seriously that God's people stopped observing it. And they didn't just stop observing it for a few months or for a year or 2 years or 7 years or 14 years or 100 years. They stopped observing the Sabbath for 490 years. Not one observance of the Sabbath. Now, 490 years, God spoke up at 490 years. Does 490, is that divisible by 7? How many 7s go in that? Yeah, a lot. So much so that God said, folks, you've stopped observing the Sabbath for 490 years, and I am kicking you out of the promised land, and this land is going to get the Sabbath that you denied it. Until it gets 490 years of Sabbaths, which is 70 years, it's going to lay dormant, and you are not going to come back into it. And the people were kicked out because they refused to observe the Sabbath. And whether they burn themselves up in the process, God said, the land, my creation, is going to get its Sabbath because it's supposed to be six on, one off, six on, one off. And he added that up, 490 years, and that's 70 years of Sabbath that the land was going to get. 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verse 21. So the message of the Lord spoken through Jeremiah was fulfilled, and the land finally enjoyed its Sabbath rest, lying desolate until the 70 years were fulfilled, just as the prophet had said. So let's jump back to our fourth command in the list of the Ten Commandments. Remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Now, this idea to remember is not just a call to mind, but it's a word that means call to mind with action. So to do something about this remembering. The action is to keep it holy, and remember that holy means to set apart. In other words, God is saying, I want you to do something different on this seventh day than you do for the other six. Something is unique here. Like I said, God takes this idea of the Sabbath seriously. And over the years, this commandment got really weird for God's people because people were afraid they were going to break the Sabbath. And so they started to create laws and rules to live by during the Sabbath so they wouldn't break the Sabbath. For example, today in Jewish culture, you can't write a check on the Sabbath. Why do you think that is? It's work. Writing a check is an exchange of money, maybe for goods and services or to do business, and that's work, so you can't write a check. But it goes a little further. See, it's not just writing a check, but you're not even allowed to carry a pen with you. Because why would you need a pen on the Sabbath? Because you might write, and writing might be considered work, and work is forbidden on the Sabbath. So no pens. I'm going to read for you directly out of the... Because what they did is they had 36 different laws. Of these 36 different laws, they developed 24 chapters on how to keep these 36 laws so you didn't break the one law of observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. They said, of course, no work. One of the things they thought was work was writing. But how much writing could you do that would be work versus how much writing could you do that isn't work? You have any idea? They cleared it up for you. Here's what the teachers of the law say. He who writes two letters of the alphabet with his right or with his left hand, see, no loopholes, whether one kind of or two kinds of letters, if they are written with different inks or different languages, that person is guilty. Even if he should write two letters from forgetfulness, he's guilty. And whether he has written them with ink or with paint or red chalk or vitriol or anything which makes a permanent mark. Also, he that writes on two walls that form an angle or on two tablets of his account book so they can be read together is guilty. But if anyone who writes with dark fluid or with fruit juice or the dust of the road or in sand or anything which doesn't make a permanent mark, he's not guilty. See, fruit juice. You write with fruit juice. If he writes one letter on the ground and then one on the wall of the house or on two pages of a book so they can't be read together, well, obviously, he's not guilty. I can't even keep my head straight on how you break this or don't break this. Keeping the Sabbath and learning how to keep the Sabbath seems to me to be more laborious than actually just working. All the rules, all the laws you had to remember and how to keep these things, and everybody's making sure everybody's keeping the Sabbath. Real focus on people. I want to give you a modern example of this kind of Sabbath keeping. Now, a very popular cookie here in America is the Oreo cookie. I have a few Oreos up here and different examples. There is quite a movement. Oh, I've learned something here. I've learned over the last little bit that talking about Oreo cookies in mixed company is kind of like talking about religion and politics. People fight over this stuff. Everybody's got their idea of what the right Oreo is and how to eat that Oreo. I mean, like, there's like, people live their lives by this, apparently. So I don't mean to offend you today, but I'm going to set you straight and give you correct training this morning. Some people like the double-stuffed Oreo. Hey, that's the people of excess. It's okay. Just know who you are. There's the mega stuff. That's for the people that are just completely over the top. They need help. There's the traditionalist. Traditionalist, the original Oreo, it was good then, should be still good today. You might know what camp I fall in with all that. But what you do is you take an Oreo out of the pack, and you don't just eat it. That's foolishness. God created something called cows for the sole purpose of providing milk, for the sole purpose of dipping Oreos. Skim milk will not do. That's just water with flour in it. And that's all that is. 1%? Yeah, you could get by with 1%. This is 2%. Again, if you like whole milk, you might be a double stuff or mega stuff person. When you pour your milk in the glass, I know you only need a little bit to dip from, but don't make the mistake of pouring just a little bit of milk in the glass, because then you can't reach the cookie to the bottom, and if you do, you've got to get your fingers in it, and it's a mess. You pour it straight to the top. You can, of course, always drink the milk afterwards, or when no one's looking, just dump it out. Okay? So, then you take your Oreo cookie. Oreos are made to be separated. You use a twisting action, and if you do it right, you'll have a clean cookie on one side and a frosting on the other. Some people are frosting Lickers. Some people are frosting Nibblers. Some like to take their teeth and they scrape it on their teeth. Those are not fun people to eat Oreos with. It really grosses you out. You have to kind of look the other way. But one way or another, some people get off. Some people use the other cookie to scrape it off. Some just kind of leave it as it is. I'm kind of a leave it as it is kind of guy. But then you take your Oreo, you can put it back together however you want to do it. If you're not going to do anything with the frosting, it was silly to separate it if you're going to put it back together. But take the cookie without, you dip it in your milk. Milk's got to be ice cold. It just makes you happy. How much time have we got? That's how you eat an Oreo. But in Jewish law, that's work. No, it doesn't seem like work, but that's work. If Oreos would have existed at the time the law was given, it very well could be that Oreos would be outlawed on the Sabbath. No twisting of the Oreo, no licking of the frosting, no scraping it off of your teeth, no putting the Oreo together, no pouring milk, no dipping into the glass. What do you think? Hold that thought. Exodus chapter 20, starting at verse 9, so the commandment's been given. He's now going to give, God's going to go in some explanation here. You have 6 days each week to eat your Oreos. Oh no, to do your ordinary work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. And this includes you, and your sons and your daughters, and your male and your female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you, even people that don't believe in God or want to observe the Sabbath, nobody gets to do any work. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and everything in them, but on the seventh day he rested. And that's why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. I think it's clear that God created the Sabbath and has asked us to keep the Sabbath, and he takes it super seriously. And so really the biggest question that maybe should enter our minds at this point is, well, when exactly is a Sabbath? Because if I have to keep it, I should really know when it is. And there is a disagreement between whether Sabbath is Saturday or the Sabbath is Sunday. I mean, we all come to church on Sunday, and we worship God on Sunday, and so the Sabbath is Sunday. But the Jewish people still observe the Sabbath on Saturday. Seventh-day Adventists worship on Saturday instead of Sunday because they say that the Sabbath is Saturday. But others say, no, the Sabbath is Sunday. Can you answer definitively when the Sabbath is? I can. The Sabbath is and has always been and always will be, and it will never change. The Sabbath is on Saturday. It is not on Sunday. It never has been on Sunday, and no one throughout the scriptures ever claimed it to be on Sunday, changed it to Sunday, alluded that it was Sunday. It has always been Saturday, and it will never change from that, from God's initial command to keep the Sabbath. It is Saturday. Is that a problem? Not at all. The Sabbath is on Saturday. But interestingly, the Sabbath as the keeping of a specific day is not even mentioned in the New Testament. In fact, the day of worship in the New Testament was Sunday. They called it the Lord's Day. Do you know why the New Testament church worshiped on Sunday instead of Saturday? Yeah, the resurrection. Because the resurrection happened on Sunday. And they're like, that's pretty cool and that's pretty significant. And from now on, we're going to worship God on the day that he resurrected. And so worship became Sunday. They called it the day of the Lord. They never called it the Sabbath. The Sabbath was still the day before on Saturday, but they worshiped together on Sunday. We hold in that same tradition and we worship on Sunday. But when the actual Sabbath is Saturday. But I will contend that there is a void throughout the entire New Testament on teaching that it's on Saturday. And the reason why is because it doesn't matter. You see, obviously there were people that became Christians that were Jews. They already knew that the Sabbath was Saturday. You didn't have to teach them that. But a huge portion of people that were not Jews, they were called what? Gentiles. They became Christians. And like in the Council of Jerusalem, when they were instructing all of these Gentiles how to live as Christians, not once in all of those teaching did they ever say the Sabbath is Saturday. They didn't even mention it because it wasn't important. In fact, the scriptures and the teachers, the disciples, Paul himself, was really clear that with Christ and his resurrection, there's no longer a need to focus on a specific day of the week, but it was still important to observe a Sabbath. Romans chapter 14, verses 5 and 6. In the same way, some think one day is more holier than another. Okay, now here's where the argument is. Is it Saturday? Is it Sunday? While others think that every day is alike. Doesn't matter when it is. So this is argument that was even happening then. And his advice is this. You should each be fully convinced that whichever day you choose is acceptable. If you choose Sabbath day as Friday, super. If you choose Saturday, super. If I choose Sunday, super. Monday, doesn't matter when. Whatever you choose, it's acceptable. Paul goes on in Colossians chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. He says, so don't let anyone condemn you for what you eat or drink, or for not celebrating certain holy days, or new moon ceremonies, or Sabbaths. Don't let anybody condemn you on what that is. For these rules are only shadows of the reality yet to come. And Christ himself is that reality. Okay, don't miss what Paul is saying here. Don't let anyone condemn you for not doing a Sabbath when you're supposed to. But that Sabbath is only a shadow of what? Read the rest of the verse. And what's the reality to come? It's like the most perfect church answer. Starts with a J. Jesus. The Sabbath is Christ. Our rest is in him. And we're to observe the Sabbath. But what day that is not nearly as important as the rest that we should have in Christ. So, take a Sabbath. I am not a good Sabbath keeper. I need to do better at this. I think I'm too important. I think there's too much that needs to be done, and if I don't do it, who's going to do it? Or maybe I find value in my list that I get done. Or somehow I feel if I just, you know, work that day instead of rest, that somehow the next week will be better. But the history proves that it isn't. There's always more to do than I have hours to do it in. But my life is better when I take a Sabbath. I'm a better pastor. I'm a better husband. I'm a better father. I'm a better friend. I'm a better driver on the roads with some Sabbath rest in my life. So take a Sabbath. God commanded it. It's something your soul needs. It's something that your body needs. So take a day to renew, to refresh, and to recharge. So here's some ideas. Nap. If you're not a napper, maybe you want to have some friends over. Maybe that sounds like work to you. Then lock your door. But some people love to have friends over. That's the most relaxing thing they can do, is just chill with people, make some food, have some fun. Maybe it's going to a movie. Or maybe it's those of you that like really long movies called books. Read one of those. Take your Jeep off-roading. Paint something. Create something. Be creative. Make some art project that's embarrassing. Go for a jog. Go for a walk. Go for a crawl. Whatever you're capable of. Get out and enjoy the day. This is a great day for it. Maybe fill up the kiddie pool. Have the kids jump in. Invite the neighbor kids. Or good golly, get in there yourself. Just have kids with you. It looks really weird with your neighbors. Just you in the kiddie pool. Grill a steak. Make food from scratch. I mean, these are things that you enjoy. Things that would bring pleasure to you. Play some golf. Frisbee golf. Miniature golf. Toss some beanbags. Garden. Gardening is not relaxing for me. That is work. But some of you, gardening is like the most stress-free thing possible. By the way, my yard could use some of you that have that. If you need to relax, come on over. I've got some weeds about this big I need to take care of. Just do whatever renews you. That's the Sabbath. Remember that it's a day that God gave you. A moment in time that he says, stop doing and just be. And acknowledge God, worship him, praise him for the blessings and the good things that you have in your life, the things he wants you to enjoy. Which brings me back to the Oreos. You see, if eating Oreos would be breaking the Sabbath because it's work, Oreo has come up with a Sabbath-keeping Oreo called Oreo Thins. You see, Oreo Thins are the more mature, sophisticated Oreos. It is a thinner Oreo, and it's not made to be twisted and separated or dunked in milk. It's just sophisticated and made just to eat. And so you don't have to break the Sabbath. You just have to. Pretty good. Now, this is a little tongue-in-cheek. I would say, I do hope that whether it's an image like the stop sign, or an image next time you're in Hy-Vee and you look at all the Oreos and you're trying to decide between s'mores or peanut butter or fudge or dipped in chocolate or mega or double stuffed or regular, and maybe you'll see the thins, that even an Oreo cookie can remind you that God wants you to rest, that he has created something good for you. An opportunity to stop and to recharge so that you're a better mom or a better husband, a better worker at work, that you see life with a sense of excitement and joy and wonder instead of dread and exhaustion. That there's something good about rest, something so good that not only did God put put it in his creation, but he observed it himself. Deal? We're going to close our service by taking a benevolent offering. And this offering is an offering that we take the third Sunday of every month. And it's not because we didn't get enough in the first offering. There are people right here sitting amongst you now that are going to find themselves on hard times. And sometimes they need some financial help. I mean, we can pray for people, can encourage people, but sometimes people just flat out need some help. This offering goes for that kind of help. Now, when you give to an offering like this, there's a couple things you need to be aware of. First of all, we are very good stewards of these funds. We don't just give money out. If someone is in financial trouble and they need debt counseling, we help them with that. We don't just give out money just because someone says they need it. We make sure it's a valid need and not a need that's going to be month after month after month that we have to continue to finance. But we also have people that come to this church that I don't know, that just walk in the door and say, I need help with this, I need gas, I need whatever it might be. We realize that those people could be going from church to church to church doing the exact same thing and basically abusing the system. And so we partner with an organization called Community Outreach. Community Outreach was formed by the churches here in Sioux Falls to be a central place when someone that comes to your church and says, I need a handout, and we say, I don't know you, you don't know anyone that goes here, you're not connected in any way. We then ask that person to go over to Community Outreach, and Community Outreach tracks all those kinds of requests and make sure that it's not a person that's just abusing the system. And if Community Outreach sees that it's a need, they'll meet that need. And a portion of this offering will go to Community Outreach to do that. So we want to be sure that if funds are needed to show the love of God in a situation, they're truly going for that and not being wasted on just somebody's abuse of the system. And so I want you to know that whether it's in-house or whether it's someone that comes into the church, that we're going to do the best we can to be the best stewards possible with your gift, because it's that important. And so as our ushers come forward to take that offering, I'm going to pray for it, and then we've got a quick video that will play during the offering. Father God, thank you for your love for us, and help us to be Sabbath keepers and not to just go off of this idea that we can just keep going and going and going, but that you created the Sabbath for us and that it's very important to you. Lord, I need to be a better keeper of that in my own life. I'm sure my other friends here are the same way. So we ask that you would, through your Spirit, remind us, whether it's through symbols like a stop sign that remind us to stop and rest in our lives, or whether it's an Oreo thin, but that you would remind us and that we would take advantage of that. And Lord, as we give this offering today for those that are under-resourced in our community, may it go to be a tangible expression of your love and your grace in a very helpful resource for those in need. We love you. We thank you for this opportunity. In Jesus' name, amen. The events depicted in that video may or may not happen. I'm not sure, but God is really serious about the Sabbath. And Maybe that's for you today. Whatever you do, let the next 7 days go by without one of those being a Sabbath. God bless you. Thank you for coming today. Feel free. Come on up. Try some Oreo Thins. For those of you Sabbath sinners, there's some double stuffed and regular here for you as well. Come on up. Thanks. You're dismissed.